This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under Stewardship Resources or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a business seminar held on March 12, 2024 in Millersburg, Ohio.
Yeah, I guess I want to extend the same thanks everybody else has. It's being here is actually a privilege, and I want to look at it as that because, you know, being surrounded by Christian businessmen is a privilege, you know, and we can stand up here and talk to a group of people that we don't have to be afraid of. We can talk about God. We can share the Word of God, and we don't have to be intimidated. You know, that means a lot. As I was preparing for this, been given a lot of thought, you know, what's a good thought, you know, what's a good opening verse, and I was searching Psalms. I always like David, and I found Psalms 5, and I like that where it says, "Give ear to my words, O God, O Lord, consider my meditation." And I thought that's very fitting for me is my meditation is, what am I going to talk about? You know, it says, "Hearken the voice, O my God, my King, you know, just unto thee I will pray." You know, and it says, "My voice shalt thou hear in the morning. In the morning, Lord, I will direct my prayers to you, and I will look up." And I want to remember that. That's where the help comes from. And I thought the speakers we had this morning have done a good job of really sharing that, and I want to try to stay on track and think of the same thing, you know. And we're talking here about marketing through reps and dealers and sales. And I've had a lot of experience in that over the years. I'm not saying I always did a good job. And today yet, I still have to remind myself, you know, doing a cold call, you know, how is that? You know, what kind of an impression do I make? What do I leave with? And so to start with, I'd like to, in the book, you've got some guidelines there, but I got some thoughts I'd really like to direct more importantly. And I find this is helping me. And I didn't put it in the book there, but, you know, I'd like to start with, you know, my first thought goes when I think of sales and marketing is I'd like to direct our thoughts to who are we, how are we known, what's our, I had put down our reputation after listening to what I did to the others, like what Bill said, character is more important than reputation, you know, and that's very true. Reputation is just one step of it. But so how are we known? That's a question I have when in the industry, when I meet with dealers and that, how are we known when I leave? You know, how do they know me? You know, do we bring honor and glory to the kingdom? Are we a light to those that we do business with? When we leave, I mean, do they feel inspired? Do they feel like they can believe what I said? Can they trust what I said? You know, then bring it back home. How would our employees describe us? If somebody asked my employees, what kind of a boss do you have? You know, what would they say? You know, how do our existing customers view us? You know, we have customers that we work with, you know, somebody walked in and asked them, what would they say? What would they have to say about us? You know, what kind of reputation do I have? You know, but more importantly, this is probably the tougher one. How does our competition view us? That's hard, you know. And I have to think of that. And I'll get to that pretty soon here, you know. But do we have good values internally? You know, that's. I ask myself, why internally? You know, we're showing things. For us, I'm going to talk a lot about cabinets because we do cabinets, but. See a cabinet here, but why am I talking about internally? You know, I have to think of Jesus' words where he said, out of the abundance of heart, that's where the man speaketh. You know, so that's how the people learn to know us. I had to ask myself again, you know, thinking about a born-again businessman, what is that? You know, to me, it takes daily maintenance on my part. You know, it's I have to keep reminding myself the true value. You know, when I sell a product, okay, we're all human. After we sell the product, are we tempted to cut corners? Are we going to deliver exactly what we sold? We sell under contract. You know, maybe once we sign the contract, it might be 3 months till we deliver the product. Am I going to deliver what I told them? You know, can I stand by that? Am I going to look for a cheaper material? You know, we have to accept the fact that we're going to be tempted by Satan when we're in business. Even though we're adults, we're businessmen, Satan's going to tempt us. He's going to tempt us with different ways to cut corners, maybe nothing else is. Most of you probably been asked, hey, will you take cash? No invoice. I think most of us have probably been faced with that. You know, what would they say if I said, yeah, I can do that? It's you know, when I think of Satan coming to us in business as a businessman, why wouldn't he? He came to Jesus. Why is he not going to come to us? You know, that's, you know, temptation is not sin, but yielding is. It says our true values come from within. And I have to, most of us probably remember, I don't know if the name Buffalo Tool rings a bell out here, but back years ago when the tools came out, those import, the first import tools, the brand we had out there was Buffalo. And boy, you'd see those, you'd hang them on the wall, and they looked shiny, they looked nice, they looked like the originals, till about the first time you put them under a test. And after you busted your knuckles a couple of times, you realize the true value wasn't there. You know, so I had to think of it, if I, you know, am I like that? Is that as long as I'm not under pressure, I'm okay. But once I'm under pressure, what kind of an impression do I leave? That's I just came over this the other day. Most of you probably saw that. The PCB, Plain Community Business Exchange, just came out the other day. They had the article in there about Chick-fil-A. And I think all of us know about Chick-fil-A. And it was in 1982, they were in trouble financially. They were trying to figure out how to go forward. So they had a board meeting. And in that board meeting, they had a group of people got together. And they came up with their purpose statement. And I don't know how many of you saw that, but it's to glorify God by being a faithful steward of all that is entrusted into us. You know, if I think of that sentence, to glorify God by being a faithful steward of all that is entrusted to us. And then the second line is to have a positive influence on all who come in contact with Chick-fil-A. That's pretty powerful. So, again, how are we known? I mean, we think of Trump. Everybody knows who Trump is. Right now, he's in hot water because of what? Real estate evaluation that's been finagled. You know, other billionaires are saying, well, everybody does it. You know, my question is, really? I mean, but yeah, do we differ? Do we dare to differ? I mean, maybe we're not a billionaire, but you know, even on our scale, do we differ? I mean, that's a, you know, it's, and like I said, I talk a lot about cabinet seminar. I mean, I talk about cabinets, you know, because that's what I'm familiar with. But to me, what I talk about applies in a lot of different areas. You know, talking to a couple of reps, asking them, you know, okay, what are some of the important things there? What means a lot to you if somebody's looking for you, looking for a dealer or looking for an outlet? And how do you go about it? And he said, one of the most important things he learned was to do research. And I think that goes whether it's a dealer or a rep or an outlet, whatever we're looking for, is. And he gave me some thoughts here. He said, identify the areas you want to target and why. And he said, identify the type of business you want to target. Find out the level of income of the people in that area. He said, are people moving to this area or are they going away? You know, which way are the people going? Is it a growing area? If possible, go there yourself. You know, interact with the people. He said, have conversations with the people from that area. Learn to know your competition. I don't know how many of you know Leon Martin from Washington. He was out in our seminar, and he's pretty excited when it comes to selling something. And he's a believer of that 15-minute elevator speech. You know, it's, he says, you get somebody in the elevator, tell them all about what you got to offer. He says, they can't get away. He said, you got 15 seconds to do it. But that's outside my comfort zone, but that's, it gave me something to think about. Be open and be willing to talk about it. Visit other tradesmen in the area. That's something I found valuable. When you're going into an area, is learn to know the area. Visit the people. Learn to know, maybe for us, maybe the granite people, the contractors, you know, whoever. Interact. Set up meetings. Show your capabilities. You know, visit, yeah, like I said, visit the other tradesmen. Learn their capability. Be realistic. You know, selling rustic furniture in downtown Chicago is not going to work. So you got to be realistic with what you're selling in what area. And that's something for where what we produce is more of a custom, higher-end cabinet. So not all markets work. So we have to be selective where we go, how we go there. You know, and it's, it definitely shows up. You know, there's, you see some of these houses that are going up, and they might be $600,000 homes, you know, a bunch of them going up in a row, but probably not our market. You know, so we have to understand that and accept that. That's okay. That's you know, something that somebody reminded me of, and it's a good thought, and something I need to remember is most of us are small enough that we're not big enough to be trendsetters. We're better off trying to follow what the trendsetter said. And I don't know if that makes sense or not, but sometimes, yeah, we can develop some colors or something that follow a pattern. But a lot of these, you know, like the color of the years, and a lot of these things are developed by who? Not us. You know, we're better off trying to follow them. It takes a lot of money to support that. I have a, I saw in the PCBE again, there was another article that I really, really enjoyed. And this was by Howard Horst. And I'm just going to read it. It's talking about marketing from a Christian perspective. That kind of fit right in with what my thoughts were. And I'm just going to read a couple paragraphs out of this. It said, the goal in Christian marketing is to do the same in reverse. While not compromising biblical principles, we need to speak in a language the world understands well enough to be comfortable dealing with us. If we want them to choose us as a supplier instead of the competitive brand, we must market in such a way that they are attracted to the quality of our product. And that's, I thought that was well put. You know, we need to market it in a way that they're attracted to the quality of our product. You know, and here's another thought. It's kind of a sobering thought, but it's something we're all faced with, and I don't think it's wrong, but it's, we all have to deal with it. Said, adding to these challenges is the fact that our closest competitor might be our Anabaptist neighbor and brother in Christ. How do we tout our product without seeming arrogant and boastful? You know, we don't have the internet, but you know, there's the internet is around, but we had the PCBE. Open that up. How many articles do you see? How many people do you see advertising the same things from all across? Interstate commerce is such a way. I mean, we build cabinets in Illinois. We deliver to California. We deliver to the East Coast. I think it's much the same way in here. Everybody goes cross state. There's no boundaries. You know, so that creates some challenges sometimes is, okay, when I talk about our brother, is it just a brother half mile down the road? Is it the brother on the other side of the state line? You know, so we're faced with that, but how do we do that? You know, and he says, you know, how do we go to market and knowing that our Christian brother, but let's stop and think about it. Is it different if it's our Christian brother, if it's not a Christian brother? How do we go to market? I think that's the part that we have to really be careful with is how do we go to market? How do we present ourselves and just offer what we do and not be arrogant? I think this is another article, that extension from that article that Howard Horst had is, says to accurately represent a gourmet product, and he's talking about food, said to accurately represent a gourmet product with an associated marketing bells and whistles is not boastful or arrogant. You know, follow what that means is that, you know, you developed a food that's real good or whatever and to market it with all the bells and whistles is not arrogant. But he said, we don't want to boast that our ingredients or skills are better than our brothers. But when sending a marketing message, we should use words that put our product in its rightful category. However, describing something as gourmet when it is not is deceptive advertising. So that's where we need to be careful because, once again, it comes back. What impression do we leave when we leave that showroom, when we leave that store? You know, what are they thinking? We had some sales reps that worked for us for a while, and they reached out into areas beyond what was a lot of the in our area. We most of the shops were reaching out to maybe 150, 200 mile radius from Arthur, and they reached out into some other areas beyond that, more into the western, and it was very common for them to come back and with the feedback that they talk to people about Amish-built cabinets. Well, I'm never a believer. I never was fond of them talking about Amish, but that was their way of representing us. They talked built by the Amish. But something that hurt was how often they came back and said, well, yeah, we know about the Amish, but most times they never deliver on time. They never get things there when they say they're going to. You know, that hurt. I didn't know who they're talking. It might have been me. I don't know. But it gave me something to think about. What is our reputation? You know, that's so let's think about that. You know, the another thing they ran into when we set them up, you know, we have in our area, we have probably 75, 80 cabinet shops. And I consider my friends with all of them as my friends, even though we're competitors. You know, we work, we do a lot of things together. My best friends own cabinet shops. You know, so we travel together, we do things together. It's not uncommon. But when they went out knocking on, you know, setting up cabinet dealers, you know, the reps would go out and try to find a dealer that could sell our product. I told them up front, I said, now, if you come to a shop that's or a store that's selling a product from our area, I said, don't try to switch them. I said, first of all, I said, we're probably going to be more expensive because of the way we're going to market. But I said, don't try to switch them. I said, for the sake of peace in the community, I said, let's not go there. I said, just move on down. There's more opportunity. We don't need to be there. And they had a hard time with that to begin with, but they respected it. But it wasn't long they came back, and they told me something I'll never forget. They said, you know, you Amish, you need to remember. He said, you want us to protect your line. You'll respect your boundaries. But he said, you know, you guys go across state lines. And he said, you have friends in all these different communities. And he said, we come up with a new color, a new door style. And we get it to our customer and they put it on the wall. The next thing you know, their competitor down the road is showing the same thing. He said, you guys need to keep more, be more secretive of what you offer. Well, we all know that there is no patent on anything, but I can still see what he says, how easy, what they were saying is how easy it is for us. Somebody called, hey, what's new? What can we do? You know, you show them a door you have. First thing you know, that thing makes its rounds, and all of a sudden, there might be on the same street in Detroit. Who knows? You know, so something to think about. You know, that put them, so when you're working with people like that, you have to be kind of, you have to remember, they like to be different. The dealers like to stand out. They like to be known as trendsetter, or hey, we got something somebody else doesn't. You know, we need to respect that as much as we can. But so I always like the thought, you know, for myself, I never like copying. I'm more about being an original. Come up with something that's different. I mean, how hard is copying? I mean, you know, somebody has a door and you cut it apart, get a knife ground, and you can make that same door. Yeah, that works, but really, what did you accomplish? You're just adding more of the same. You know, be an original. I like coming up. Make your own adjustments. Be creative, you know, and understanding that what I said a while ago is we're not big enough to be trendsetters, but we are. We can talk to our dealers. They can help us. You know, what do they need? So So think about when you're out looking for dealers or whatever, think about the services you can offer. What can I do that will make their business better? You know, I my thoughts go back to Finish Works when they came out in our area. A lot of people know about Finish Works. Back in the day, they were not coming into our area, but we started using their services because they offered their tech support behind the scene was second to none. The varnish they carried in a bucket wasn't that much different than anybody else's. But we went to them because of what they could offer beyond just the finish. You know, so think about that. When you go to market, you know, there, be looking for that opportunity. You know, what can we do? I'd like to jump over now. We've got the book here. You know, if you want to go to page 20, and I'll try to cover some of this. I'm going to run out of time, and I don't want to do that, so I don't want to go over. But you know, the one thing I want to mention when you're looking for dealers or reps, okay, the more custom you are, probably the more one-on-one it takes. If you're building something that you can standardize, you can put it in a catalog, and you can sell out of a catalog, reps work much better. But the more custom you are, where it takes training, it takes understanding, you know. So there's a fine line there that's a little hard to, it depends on what you're making. But that I do find, talking to like furniture manufacturers, that's much easier because you can build your furniture unless you're doing custom. But I mean, if you're doing a standard furniture, you can build a catalog. You can train your people to sell out of that. So when as I'm going through this, let's just remember that, you know, that does make a difference on what people, how easy it is, you know, okay, the difference or the value of a rep versus a dealer. And I'm gonna start here with number one is methods of a channel of which our product can flow to the end user. And that's a dealer, to me, is a storefront. That's a storefront, or they, some dealers work at a kitchen bath, dealers work out of their home, but they work out of an office somewhere. Reps are sell, you know, reps are those that travel around, and they actually go to, they find those dealers, they find the stores. They actually, a rep is seldom involved in the final sale. They're more supporting the sales. So when I'm setting up a dealer, you know, my question is, what are the things I should be looking for? And again, it depends on the product you have, the level of product. We had considered backing down to a more basic product, focusing more on boxes, quantity, but we chose not to. We decided we're going to stay with the, you know, the higher end, the quality, and we don't do as many boxes as a lot of shops do, but we deliver what we deliver. So those dealers are a little harder to find. They're hidden. They're not wanting people knocking on their door. And when we had reps, that was something I soon figured out. The reps have a hard time getting to those designers. They could get to the designers that were maybe their bottom, you know, their top end might have fit us, but that was about it. But they had a lot of people that wanted to upsell. You know, so that's something you have to think about is, you know, when setting up a dealer, are they really a good fit? Most of them have a storefront or an office where they can display your samples or products. You know, finding a dealer who's a good match, you know, that's, like I talked about earlier, do an interview. Go in and do an interview before you really start getting into it. For us, it was always like, well, let us, okay, if we saw they look like a potential, let us price a job so you can see how we compare to what you're used to. You know, there's different ways you can do it. And sometimes we'd say, let's try a job before we really make any decisions. And, you know, the other thing you want to remember is, do they represent us in the way you want to be represented? You know, and I think I can talk freely here. We live in a time where we have people out there that, is that who we want to represent us? We had one that came in, the dealer, when we had the reps, they brought, I still don't know, was it a guy or a gal? But it was one of them along that wanted to sell our cabinets. And after they left, I talked to one of the head reps. I said, look, I said, I'm a little uncomfortable with this. I said, what do I do? He said, well, he said, you're going to have to be careful. He said, you got to be real careful how you handle that. It never materialized. I thank God to this day that he sheltered us from that, because that could have been bad. You know, so those are things that it's uncomfortable to talk about, but we're faced with it. You know, it's right at our doorstep. when I think about setting up a dealer, what are some of the things that are expected of me is, you know, the sales aids, you know, the color box door samples, literature, you know, whatever it takes to support them to sell what we have is what's important. And you know, as you can all think about that, depending on what you have is, you know, I'm a firm believer of branding your product. It may sound strange, you know, branding a cabinet, what is the value you have of that? It's surprising how many times we get people that call, they bought a house, they want to remodel, they want to add on or whatever. But more importantly, twice now, we've had it where people thought they bought a kitchen, a Das Hohes kitchen, and somebody sold them something else. I feel sorry for the poor guy that did it. Both cases didn't turn out very well for either one of them. But it was, that's when somebody asks, is open the drawer, my name's not on it, it's not us. Now, we do have one of our designers that we sell a lot through in Grand Rapids, and we private label for her. So if it's not her name or our name, you know, we do some co-branding, but usually we'll put like Magnolia by Das Hohes Haus or something like that on it, you know. But I'm a firm believer, if you're going to develop a product, put your name on it. I really encourage that. You know, something else that dealers really enjoy, that's support. You know, support them. You know, you just can't give enough support. And sometimes it's even in the sale. We just had one just recently. She drew up this expensive-looking refrigerator unit that was really detailed, and the customer really wanted it. That's what they wanted, but they didn't like the price. We were like, well, it was our job to explain to her why it takes this to build it. You know, educate them. It wasn't blue sky. It was like, you know, okay, well, they could take this out and take 5,000 off. They could do this and take 3,000 out. But we gave her those tools so she could go to the meeting and sell that. To me, that was support, you know, and she sold it. So provide quick answers so they can keep an interest in the customers. And that's a key thing. When they have the customer walks in, give them what they need so they can answer it now, you know, as quick as they can. Or if they need to come to you, get back to them as quick as they can. Keep that fire burning. If that guy is there, wants to buy something, help them. The longer it goes, you know, they might start looking around, you know. It's so, and when we set up dealers, that's their livelihood. They depend on us. So it's very important for us to support them and give them what they need so they can sell what they need. And because if they miss a sale, that's, you know, all the time they spent is gone. So, and letter F there is I had, well, E was instructions and training on how to submit an order. F is a smooth, efficient channel on communication. We know that, you know, our standards aren't all the same. My encouragement is do the best you can within the standards you have. You know, something you, when we sell our products to the dealers, it's also very important that the dealers understand what's expected. You know, one thing that comes to my mind is if you have a warranty, make sure they understand what that warranty means. And I'm just going to use the example of painted cabinets. And I don't know how many cabinet makers we have or furniture or guys that paint wood, but anybody that paints wood knows it's going to get hard and it's going to crack. You know, it's my dad taught me that when I was a boy. Concrete does two things. It gets hard and it gets cracks. Paint does the same thing. You can paint those joints where everything looks fine. After that kitchen's in, a little bit of time, you're going to see those joints. That's not product failure. You know, it's important. The dealers understand that. If not, you know, that could be a tough conversation at the end. Because, once again, it's expectations, meeting the expectations of what they're looking for. Another thing that's really can be touchy, and that is samples, displays. If you take something in and you want to set them up, make sure that everybody understands what the arrangement is. Is this my product? I'm just putting it here. Or are you selling it at a discounted price? And if something ever happened with our relationship, who owns that? Make sure those things, set those expectations, make sure, you know, you always have to think about it. When you start something, you have to think about an exit plan too, because there may be an exit. You know, we don't like to think about that. We like to think about long-term relationship, but we also need to think about if I strike up a deal, what happens if we ever part ways? Their choice or my choice? You know, we have to think about that. Sometimes manufacturer will give displays and samples to the dealers at no charge, and that's okay. The manufacturer wants to do that, but make sure the dealer knows, if that's my display, if you ever quit selling, I'm going to come pick it up. You know, so think about those things. Now I'm going to move on to reps. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the reps. It depends. There again, it depends on the market you have. One thing I would encourage, if you're going to have a rep, try to find them away from your home base. Setting up a rep in your home territory would probably be the last place I'd set one up. I would do it in the far-reaching areas where you can't be. And that's really what a rep is for. A rep is an extension of me. If I'm setting up a rep and I want to do the Southeast U.S., down in the Florida, Georgia market, Carolinas, I can't be there all the time. I need somebody that can be there. That's a good opportunity to set up a rep. You know, I'm in Illinois. You know, it takes 12 hours to get down there, 14 hours. You know, so having somebody... A rep is somebody that will spend time, learn to know that area, learn to know the competition, and a good rep will know where to go with your product because that's what their job is. So so when you think of different kinds of reps, there's an independent rep, there's single reps, you know, there's some reps will offer multiple lines. You know, an independent rep or a single rep offers only your product. Is probably more of a personal approach, you know, less exposure than a rep group because he only reaches around. I mean, a rep, and I've traveled with reps, you know, a good rep will call on a person, they'll set up an appointment, they'll call on this person, and then when they get back in the car, it's different than me. If while he's driving to the next meeting, I can be sitting there making notes. They can't. So they will find a place, go sit down, and they'll make a log of what happened. You know, and that is something I would really require if you have a rep, is give you a report, activity report. What are they doing? Who are they calling on? What are we paying for? What are these things that are, it's, reps don't like doing that. You know, if they resist it, then I'd probably push harder because that's when you're paying commission and they're covering your territory, reps tend to forget who they work for. Reps tend to think it's all about me. And I'm just sharing that. That's, I've talked to different people that have reps. Not all of them are that way, but there's a large majority that will end up, I don't know, maybe got some reps in here, I don't know, maybe I'm stepping on toes, but it's, that's my experience, is that reps become very independent, they become very strong-willed, and they don't want to do what they're told. You know, so it's a, I mean, if you have an in-house rep, he's working for you, that's much different. And probably what I'm sharing more is more about people that are reps that maybe they handle multiple lines, and you're just one of their products. You know, so they kind of pave their own way. They don't want to, you know, they want to do their thing on their time, and then they want to get things set up, and they basically, you know, they got the checks coming in. And so you have to be real careful about that. It can be a good thing, but just cautioning, make sure. You know, a single rep has is likely more dedicated and focused. You know, he has no sales, he has no commission. You know, the downside is if he leaves you, you have no rep. You know, so if you have a, when you have a rep with multiple lines, you know, it's similar things, except, you know, what happens, their focus is divided. You're just one of what they have to offer. You know, they can reach more areas, but it becomes a little more, for us, it was a little more cumbersome. A rep group is what we had actually experienced, and it was a team of reps, and they carried good, better, best. And if you're ever in that arrangement, make sure you're in the better line, the mid-range. And the reason, people sell the easiest thing to sell. The higher end takes more training. The lower end is more about price point. So reps that surround themselves with three levels, you can bet their main focus and their main cash cow is going to be right in the middle. That's the easiest thing. That's why they're there. So think about that. Make sure when they're taking your product to market, what else are they carrying and where are they placing me? You know, where do you find yourself? It's, like I said, rep group is, you know, it's people working for an agency operating under one ownership with each rep given a certain geographical territory. You know, they can, a rep group will cover a big area and they can cover more states, they can cover more region, but realistically, I like seeing reps covering a certain area and make sure they're getting the most out of that region, not driving 300 miles to the next stop. You know, let's make sure we use up the resources that are there before you go to the next state. one of the downsides of a rep group, we found out, okay, you're kind of removed. You are removed from the end user quite a bit. You're removed from the dealer. And it requires a lot of product to keep them staffed with what they need to go to market. They're going to want a lot of samples. And they like getting samples in front of people. Their idea is if they get them samples and that, and they look good, people are going to sell. And sometimes it works, but not always. You know, sometimes they want it just because it makes them look good. You know, and we found that out the hard way. You know, so we put a lot of money into samples that really didn't bring returns in. So since we've moved away from reps, we try to go more direct one-on-one with the dealers, you know, teaming up with whether it's contractors, interior designers, and then instead of us coming to them saying, here's our sample set, is finding out from them, what do you need for your region? Because not every territory uses the same thing. Get what they need, then we develop what they want. And once again, we're not trendsetters. We just try to follow the trends and produce what they look for, what they're looking for. I'm gonna go down here to letter D. We're running out of time here. So, you know, repping, an in-house rep is definitely gonna be your most personal. He's definitely gonna be more involved in being with you He's there for you. He learns the product. And I can't stress this enough. Whether you're going out for dealers or you're setting up a rep, the best way to sell that product is understanding what you're selling. You know, and that is probably one of the weaknesses that we have in our Anabaptist history is we learned how to work hard, but we didn't learn how to sell. And, you know, we got Junior sitting here, I think he can sell anything, you know, but it's not everybody's gifted like that or like, you know, but it's not our background. It's not, we learn how to get something done. We learn how to work hard and get it done. But to sell, and I still struggle with that. I enjoy sales, but a cold call, and most of you probably done a cold call. You're wanting to reach into a new region that you haven't been, and you search it out. Okay, I want to walk in and talk to these people, set up a meeting or whatever. And how do you know, for us to walk in and just start talking about our product, it's how do you do that without being boastful? Think about it. I'm just asking these questions. Think about it. What's the best way to present ourselves? You know, it's when a rep walks in and he goes in and he says, I'm here from Berlin Gardens and, you know, we build the best gazebos in the Midwest. You know, sounds much different than if Adley walks in and says it. You know, so if we think of those things, it's, and maybe our upbringing of you're not bragging, which I'm agreed, we don't want to brag, we don't want to be boastful, keeps us from wanting to talk about our product. You know, once somebody calls me and wants me to show them what I have, it's easy. I don't know how it is for the rest of you, but it's easy. But making that cold call, that initial one, is kind of, you have to kind of like, I don't know, be interested in knowing how others feel. But it gives you a challenge, but it's a good feeling when you can start having that conversation. You know, so I want to skip over some of this, but you know, you can take this home. I tried to put a lot of these thoughts in it. I thought if I don't get through this, you can look through it. It's there's a lot of this is there is no industry standard. There's a lot of industries. I mean, there is somewhat of an industry standard, but you know, each one has to be tailored. But if you're going to set up a rep, there's a couple thoughts I want to make sure that I clear with you and leave with you before. Take this home. If you're wanting to look for a rep, when you sit down to set up an arrangement with them, make sure you have a exit plan, a terminating plan. Do that at the same time. And review that every year. Sit down, ask them, how's it going? How's it working for you? You know, their costs might be higher than they thought. Make sure they're okay. You know, so review that every year. If it's not working for you, be sure and share it to them. You know, I had to have numerous difficult conversations here with these college-educated guys, this little eighth-grade boy telling them, you're not getting the right people. And they're looking at me like, how do you know? And I said, well, it's not. I said, I know they're out there. But I said, you're not getting to them. And they couldn't, after we moved away from them, it became real to me why they couldn't. A lot of those are sheltered. They're not out there publicizing. You may see their website, but you won't find an address. They're sheltered. They don't want everybody knocking on their door, especially not reps. Most of those, what I call the better dealers that we work with, know more about cabinets than our reps did, you know, when it came to custom cabinets. So, and that's, there again, I'm talking about custom cabinets. That's different in different areas. But, you know, if you have a more of a standard line, you can create a catalog and give them a catalog. To me, that's much easier. So, and training, and I can't stress that enough, whether it's a dealer or a rep, is the people will sell the easiest thing to sell. And the more they're educated, the more they're trained, the easier it is for them. And if you sell to, if you're selling to a dealer that has multiple lines, and a customer comes in, guess what they're going to sell? They're going to sell the one they understand the most. We sell some retail at the showroom, and along with that, the countertops. Well, anybody knows anything about countertops knows there's lots of different brands and lots of different products out there. I have countertop people come in, they want to, hey, I want to display, I got this, I got Cambry, I got, you know, I got Hymax, I got this. They want to set you up with that. Well, I'm the same way as anybody else. The easiest thing for me to sell is the ones I know the most about. I mean, doesn't mean that's a bad countertop. But if I don't know, if I'm not comfortable with all the ins and outs of that, I don't have much experience, I don't have much knowledge, I'm going to go over to the one that I know something about. You know, so I feel that's the same way for our cabinet dealers. When we're selling to our cabinet dealers, is the more I support them, the more I train them, the more I educate them, the better it will be. So once again, let's remember. I like the thought of, you know, what are we leaving for them? You know, I like that purpose statement from Chick-fil-A again. You know, all those that come in contact with us, you know, may they feel God's light. You know, we have no continuing city here. We're looking for a better place. This is just for now. So let's remember that. That's my closing thought. So thanks a lot, and God bless you.